they plan to fill the vacant positions, Chairperson. Thank you. Other questions that have been covered by Honourable Winkler. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honourable Weber.
Thank you, Chair. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
All right. Thank you, Chair. Chair, on priority number 5, I just want to get there quickly. It was slide 6. All right. Priority number 5. It was mentioned that there were 300 municipal councillors or officials trained. I would like to know what the criteria that was used to identify in which municipality these councillors will, how they were identified in order to do it. Have there been a difference in the municipalities that, a significant difference by the councillors or officials being trained? And then, is the department going to move the training of municipality councillors and officials going to eventually start covering all the municipalities? Who is paying for this training? Is it the department, or is it SOLGA, or is it the municipality itself? Then I also want to go to the 80 million that has been identified. If the department, once they have budgeted for all this money, how and where and how this will be spent. Then, sorry, I'm just going through all my questions. Regarding, it is amazing to see how many accredited training these things to take place. Some of it is permanent posts. There's one slide that shows the 40 permanent posts and then 110 temporary posts. But I'm a little bit concerned. I understand it comes from different budget points, but we have currently over 400 frozen posts due to a lack of resources. And then we have over 291 posts that is vacant. So if a post is frozen, it was explained that there's no resources for it. Should it not be wise to use resources to first or to use the money to get these posts that is important unfrozen, budget for it, because we keep on training people, but we have over 500, 600 posts, well, vacant and frozen, and I do think it's important that we need to get these posts filled. Then I want to know, I see a couple of the programs have given their books or over to the external audit. I want to know how much the cost is of an external audit, and when will do they expect to have the audit from the external auditors coming back, and if they will let us know what their findings were on those audits. Regarding waste, I've seen, and we have many meetings about the disposable diapers, and I know the department is busy with some documentation on diapers. I don't see that covered anywhere, and diapers at this stage is one of our main resources that troubles our waterways in many ways. So maybe I missed it, but what are we doing about the disposable diapers? I have one question on air pollution, but I will put in written questions on that. But my question is, there's 15 priority areas where the monitoring is going on to SACIS. My question is, Kendall is one power station that is probably the biggest culprit and the most polluted one. I want to know why and how Kendall is reporting on the emissions, to whom they're reporting it, because it's not on SACIS. And I would like to know if there's any other of our significant power stations and their monitoring of air pollution, why that is not also on SACIS, and what we can do to ensure that is happening, because I'm not sure who is doing Kendall's monitoring. Then I just want to look, you're finalizing everything. Chair, I think that will be fine for now. All other questions I will put into written questions. There was just one question about the notices that's been given. I know Honourable Winkler spoke about the cases that went to the NPA, but can we have an indication if there has been any notification for monitoring wrongly emissions to any of our power stations within the high priority areas? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Weber. I don't see any other hand. Look, DG, we understand that the Ocean Economy Master Plan is a multi-stakeholder plan involving repair, marine manufacturing, marine transport, offshore oil, gas, aquaculture, fisheries, and so on. And of course, the private business in the ocean's economy to try and aid job creation and increase our gross domestic product and the economic recovery and potential growth. But how does the department want to ensure that all the stakeholders effectively make their respective fair contributions to the comprehensive implementation of the Ocean Master Economy Master Plan? What are the sticks? What are the carrots that the department would use to ensure that everyone comes on board to ensure the implementation at agreed time frames? I see you have also consulted a number of stakeholders in government on finalizing the APPs that you have presented here. I'm just wondering, what does it mean in terms of the implementation? Are you saying to us that we are likely to see a better implementation or a higher achievement of the current set of APPs than we have in the past 3-4 years ever since we were here? If we can be clarified just on that. DG, I'm not too sure who's starting.
Thank you, Jefferson, and thank you to yourself, Honorable Chen, Honorable Members, for the questions that you've highlighted. I will request the DDGs to respond to the respective areas. There are areas where I will also then come in at the end in relation to some of the matters and issues that have been raised for clarity by Honourable Members. I think the question by Honourable Weber on the system priority areas, I don't know whether, Chair, am I correct, or I heard Honourable Weber right around the Kendall station, because I think there's a lot of details that she's requiring on whether it will be part of the written questions or we are expected to respond to that and at this point in time. But we would really request that we be given an opportunity to ensure that we respond comprehensively in writing, so that we provide all the information that is being requested by Honourable Weber. I'm going to go through the various programs, and they will then respond to their respective areas. There's certain areas at the end that I will come back and cover, Chair. We will start with the CFO and also the DDG CMS. There's vacant position, turnaround time of vacancies, but also there's issues around the audit, the audits, external audits, and what the target actually entails. Thank you, Chair. Over to the CFO and the DDG CMS.
Thank you, DJ. Thank you to the honorable members for the questions. From my side, the question is around the audit. What we have put as our target for the 23-24 financial year APP is that we are striving to ensure that we get an unqualified audit opinion, which will be expressed by the Office of the Auditor General. According to the legislative timeframe, AG is supposed to finalize the audit by the 31st of July, so meaning for the entire operations that will be taking place in the 2023-24 financial year, we will be submitting our financial statements on the 31st of May, and then Auditor General will start with their audit, with the conclusion being provided to the department at the end of July. So that is the target that we are striving to achieve for the 2023-24 APP. Thank you.
Thanks. In terms of the vacancy rate, the vacancies are not concentrated in one specific area. We balance between the turnaround in terms of exits as well as new vacancies. So the vacancies are basically spread in all management. However, priority has been on filling of critical posts, mainly in the core functions as well as senior management posts. Posts that which have been filled in the last quarter of the financial year, it was 60, and we have already advertised another 66, that which we are prioritizing to fill in the first quarter. So we have quarterly targets which we are prioritizing, also taking into consideration the capacity to be able to process the vacancies within a short space of time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can I request the DDG, Regulatory Compliance, to talk to the compliance issue?
Thank you, DG. I believe there was just one question from Honorable Winkler relating to the budget. In terms of the budget allocation, yes, we do agree that my branch has the lowest budget. What we have been doing is, as part of considering exactly what the compliance and enforcement needs would be, we need to be guided by clear, you know, evidence to look at what are the constraints and the capacity requirements throughout the country. We're in the process of finalizing our compliance and enforcement strategy, which will take into consideration the specific constraints throughout the country, capacity, resources. Also looking at it from a strategic point of view, we're all aware that the budget in government is quite constrained, especially on compensation. So what we're looking at is we're hoping that the compliance and enforcement strategy will guide and look at the specific needs, capacity as well, and this will then be utilized to motivate for additional resources, specifically on compensation, because as we well know, we require warm bodies on the ground in order to ensure that there's proper compliance and enforcement. However, whilst we are looking at finalizing the strategy and looking at a possible increase in our budget, we are utilizing and leveraging off donor funding, which we received. And in the donor funding, we beef up a lot of our enforcement capacity, specifically in terms of secondments and also resources, which we get from donor funds. And but this is not sustainable in the long term. So we are looking at motivating for additional funding, operational as well as for compensation budget. Regarding the dockets, we have approximately 75 cases that are sitting with the NPA throughout the country. Unfortunately, the NPA's, the decision making is a bit slow, so we are dependent on the NPA to finalize and to get back to us on the finalization of those dockets. Thank you, DG. I'm not sure if I missed any other questions. Thank you.
DG, can I request that you also comment on our involvement in terms of the Eteguini matter as part of enforcement?
So in terms of the Eteguini matter, DG, our team are working together with the other respondents, specifically in terms of responding to the issues that have been raised as part of the court case. Prior to that particular case against Eteguini, my team were already in the process of a number of enforcement actions, which was raised as part of the court matter, and this was brought to the attention of the applicants as well. We're in the process via the respective parties to consider how Eteguini can be brought into compliance. These issues have already been raised as part of the compliance and enforcement initiative. And we also are of the same mind as part of the action against Eteguini is to bring them into compliance because we had huge concerns regarding their non-compliance, DG. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can we get Oceans and Coast to comment on the water testing and also the Oceans Master Plan and various other matters?
Thank you, DG. Good afternoon, honorable members again. On the water quality issue, this water quality program has been running for the last 2 or 3 years. So the majority of the sites have been identified previously. And the idea behind it was to really screen the flows to the estuarine and nearshore ocean area to pick up what is the pathway of pollutants, heavy metals, nutrients that are getting to the estuaries and to the nearshore area. So the 30 of the 40 sites have been established already. We do have some flexibility with the additional 10 sites that we are targeting for this coming financial year, and that we can develop with the coastal provinces. The overwhelming issue in our discussions with Eteguini has really been the sewage infrastructure and the damage during the floods, and that's masking a lot of the flows at the moment. But what the monitoring program, if assistance is needed, we could track improvement of water quality as the infrastructure builds up. But the real intention of this was to pick up where the hotspots at flows and midway that are getting down to the estuaries in the nearshore area. That's for the water quality. Then the second aspect is the ocean's economy. So the team has, around each of the sectors mentioned, they have task teams and working groups that really develop implementation plans over the next few years. And implementation plans come down to investments from national departments or investments that the sector national departments are targeting together with the sector industries. And so the implementation plan is currently being developed with the task teams. So Chair asked about carrot and stick. So far, we're trying to use the carrot only. We're not sure as a coordinating department what stick we have, but the implementation plan will have commitments in around, for instance, port and port infrastructure and associated industries. So we are looking for sector departments to commit to that. There's an indication of the sector department's commitment in their sector plan that was published earlier this year in terms of their ambition for the various aspects of either deep ocean industries or near shore and port services. Thank you, DG.
Thank you. Can I request DG, BNC, to respond to the issues?
Thanks, DG. I had one question from Honorable Gancho around increasing the capacity of previously disadvantaged individuals in our capacity building initiative. I take it that this relates to the biodiversity economy program that we have, and Honorable Gancho will know that the interventions that we are implementing are quite specialized related to the biodiversity economy area, And for the next, for this financial year, we're looking at training about 400 of those beneficiaries in different types of accredited training to allow these individuals to then participate in a number of biodiversity economy related initiatives across the country. This may relate to specialized services around hunting related industries such as leather tanning treatment, taxidermy services, bioprospecting in terms of the selection of what type of plants that can be planted for various uses or otherwise business enterprises. So it's quite a variety of accredited trainings that we provide to the identified beneficiaries, largely youth and women are those people that we then target. So this particular program comes out of the training program comes out of the biodiversity economy strategy. We intend to sustain it. And members, honorable members, will recall that our biodiversity economy strategy goes up to 2020. We are currently reviewing it so that we can enhance some of its elements, especially in relation to what has emerged out of the high-level panel as one example, the white paper also, and the members will also know that we do have a focus on transformation also. So the revision of that particular strategy will help us in ensuring that having implemented some of the training in this MTSF, we will sustain it up to 2030, which is the horizon for our biodiversity economy strategy. Thank you.
Thank you, DDG. Can we get DDG EP to respond? I think DDG EP and waste around the training and also of counselors, accredited training, and also how we ensure that we're capacitating the local government sphere in as far as the waste management is concerned.
Thank you, DG. With regard to the training that we offer to councillors and municipal officials, it is also needs-driven. So usually in the first quarter, we engage through the platforms that we have, our integrated governance relations structures. We do have a district waste management forum as well as provincial waste management forums that form part of the MINTEC and MINMEC structures. So in terms of the key areas that are prioritized or municipalities usually put forward is with regard to their responsibilities, legislative responsibilities with regard to waste management and what is required with regard to the designation of waste management officers. Also the integration of waste pickers, I think it was an issue that was raised by one of the honorable members. Waste pickers also play a significant role in terms of diverting recyclables away from landfill, and some of the municipalities, they struggle in terms of how do they integrate them. We do have guidelines, and the training also focuses on that. The tariff setting, because one of the tariffs at local government also responds to a cost recovery with regards to provision of waste services. So how they could set the tariffs, there is a focus on that. Waste characterization in terms of the waste that is being generated in the respective municipalities, and how do they go into analyzing that waste
and informing the information that they get from the analysis, informing the type of infrastructure that is required to manage waste in the particular municipality. So that is also part of what is considered. Also, the waste bylaws, we do have a model bylaws that we have developed as a department, and the training also focuses on that. Integrated waste management plans that each municipality needs to have in terms of the requirements of those plans, what needs to be covered, is also part of the training. In terms of what is, we don't only focus on training, but also look into other aspects of waste management that needs to be covered. We've also worked with other departments, in this case, National Treasury, Cooperative Governance, and of late, Human Settlements. There are grants that are part of the Division of Revenue, and lately they have been reviewed. One example is on the Municipal Infrastructure Grant, to ensure that if that grant also provides for the procurement of vehicles that are necessary for managing the waste services, the trucks, as well as the landfill compactors, the front-end loaders that usually assist with clearing of illegal dumps and so on. So with Human Settlements also, especially on the urban development grant, that also we have seen reduced, because previously those grants did not allow for utilization of those grants for the yellow fleet use. And then the other question related to, okay, who pays for this? This training, we do it collaboratively with SAUGA, and between us, the department, and SAUGA, because as part of also our managing the relations with municipalities and provinces, we make the training, as well as ensure that the municipalities receive. So it's an on-the-job training, ensuring that they are able to understand what is required and what they need to be delivering to fulfill their mandate. The other question was on the disposable diapers, in terms of what are we doing. So we currently in this year, we are working to develop a strategy. But before going into the strategy, we need to also analyze the situation. We're talking about absorbent hygiene products, so the disposable diapers is one of those, as well as the adult, the feminine care products. There are options that we could consider, but what the message that we are wanting to drive is that refuse collection needs to be there, because the diapers that have been used is part of the waste that needs to be collected. But we know that some of the areas are facing challenges. So the consideration would also be to look into whether we need to prioritize this waste stream, because there are other alternative products that could be used, the reusable towel nappies and so on, but it's part of what would be considered as part of the strategy development and the action plan, and we will also be taking that into consultation. As this project is for 12 months, so it will only be starting now, and we are signing off the work plans now. Thank you, DG. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thanks, DDG, Chemicals and Waste Management. Can we have DDG EP?
Thank you, DG. Based on, or building from what DDG Masukene has shared in terms of training, specifically on waste management, I would like to highlight that the department, as part of the sector coordinator for the environment sector, has a local government support strategy within which we work closely with provinces and in particular with SAHCA on not only on training, for example, the detail that we've just received, training on waste management. We do work with SAHCA and also the municipalities in terms of providing training on other areas that are part of the mandate of the department, for example, on climate change, on conservation, air quality, and also on compliance and enforcement. So in that regard, I also would like to highlight that as part of the local government support strategy, the department, as a coordinator and lead for the sector, also goes beyond training. So the department is part of assisting municipalities in terms of understanding and also being better able to execute their environmental management mandate. We have placed officials, local government support officials across the municipalities that are supported by youth in the different municipalities to just make sure that we, from a capacity perspective, we partner with municipalities, not only in terms of training, but also making sure that they have the warm bodies located that can be of assistance. And also we work closely as part of or within the local government support strategy in terms of implementing a range of projects within the portfolio of the department. So in this regard, I just want to also emphasize that it's the partnership with SAHCA that is critical, and across the different trainings, we partner with SAHCA in terms of co-funding, but also in terms of just making sure that when we identify the priorities and also the participants for those training, we don't do it on our own as a department. We work closely with SAHCA, and we do our best also in terms of involving municipalities. For example, when it comes to recruiting the capacity, the local government support capacity that is there or is made available by the department to assist them. So the training, DG, goes beyond just waste management, and the training in this regard is in line and is informed by the local government support strategy. Thank you, DG.
Thank you very much, DDG. Can we have the forestry?
Thank you, DG. In terms of the question that was asked, whether we do interact with the climate change program, the answer is yes. We work very closely with them in recognition of the role that the forests have in terms of climate change mitigation. So within the branch, we have a unit that deals with forestry policy management, and that is the unit that interacts directly with the climate change branch, where we look at the strategies and the work that we can do as forestry to try and bring in the sector, but also the activities within the branch that support climate change related matters. Thank you, DG.
Thank you, DDG. DDG Middleton, I'm not quite sure whether you had any issues to respond to on fisheries and MLRS.
DG, there were no fisheries-directed questions that I'm aware of. Maybe it's because Honourable Paulson's not in the meeting.
No, thank you. Thank you so much.
DG, through you, Chair, I'm back.
Oh, thanks, Minister. Thank you, Minister. I think there were issues on the climate around the extent at which to which we engage very closely with DMRE around the issues of the just transition, and also the labor in terms of its implementation and the plan itself, the extent at which as a department, the work that we have done, and of course I think the PCC has been very instrumental in as far as that is concerned. I think the member, if I understood Honorable Winkler very well, was requesting for an indication on to what extent do we have discussions across government in as far as just transition is concerned. So that's one of the critical area. The other one, Minister, Honorable Weber possibly is going to
has indicated that she is going to send a written question around the SACPIS, the 15 priority areas, but her interest is on Kenda in terms of whether they are reporting, and if they are not on SACPIS, how are they reporting in relation to their emissions? Also, if there's any notification, I was hoping that compliance would have responded to this. No other notification that have been, do we have notification that have been issued to any other power station in relation to air quality compliance? I think those were the matters. There's also an issue on the US dollar, 80 million target, which we are targeting for the year 23-24. The details around that is what members, and I think Chloe is back in the meeting, he can be in a position to then highlight what exactly are the sources and where, what are those programs, and do the funds flow directly to the department? And I think Chloe, you will clarify that it's various institutions, including entities and also DFIs, in as far as the donor funding is concerned. But I think Flo can just elaborate on the 80 million. Those are the matters, Minister.
So I think that let's agree on the SACWIS and on the Kendall. We'll await the written question because I'm sure we would need to do some research on that matter. Chloe can answer on the 80 million. On the Just Transition, honourable members would know that the Just Transition is located in the Presidency, not with our department, and the Presidency coordinates the implementation of the Just Transition. But what I can share with the honourable member is that after the JET IP was handed over to the partners in November last year in Egypt, the JET IP document was handed to the Climate Commission to facilitate public consultation on the plan. And Honourable Weber should also know is that a number of ministers are commissioners. So I am a commissioner. I attend the PCC meetings. Minister Mantashe is a commissioner. Minister Ibrahim Patel, the new Minister of Energy, the new Minister and the President, Minister Chaveni, Minister Gordon. There are a number of ministers who are commissioners, and we attend the Climate Commission meetings. There was a workshop on Friday where the Climate Commission was concluding feedback on the JET IP, and my understanding at that workshop is that I left the PCC because I had to travel. But the PCC is planning to hand over comment to the Presidency, and I'm sure in due course the Portfolio Committee could invite the PCC to give feedback on the consultation that was done around the JET IP. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, DG. Let me hand over to Clu so that he can just talk about the 80 million. Thank you.
Commissioner Minister, are you aware that I'm still in charge?
I thought you'd outsourced to the DG to answer all questions, but it's always through you, Chair. I wouldn't dare do anything else.
Yeah, well, I was shocked that you are taking over. I'm shocked. DG, you can't be borrowed power. But that's fine. You can get clarity on the 80 million and we'll break.
is also through multilateral finance mechanisms, where through our participation in these structures, we ensure that our accredited entities in this regard for adaptation fund, we have SANBI that has been accredited to adaptation fund, will be able to access resources for implementation. And on the GCF, we have, of course, SANBI and the GCSA as our direct accredited entities. They are also able to access funding. And these resources, honorable members, they do not necessarily flow through the department. They go through, among other things, accredited entities to fund programs on ground. Thank you, DG. Over to you. Back to your chair.
Yeah, that is what I wanted to say, Mr. Amar. You can't give... You people of the department are just exchanging power to one another.
My apology, Chair.
Okay, that's fine. Honorable members, I suppose, or DG, your end is up.
Yes, Chair, there's just two questions I think members raised. I think Honorable Weber was questioning the various accredited training that we have as a department. And why are we not necessarily pulling all those funding to then fund the frozen posts so that we then beef up capacity in as far as the department is concerned? I think what I want to highlight there is that as various departments, National Treasury has set a ceiling in as far as personnel costs are concerned. So we can only have posts up to a particular cap and not beyond. And we do not necessarily have a leeway. Even if we can have resources, we need to go back and sit down with a very clear strategy with National Treasury on how do we work around ensuring that we live within the ceiling. So that is what we do on a continuous basis as we go from year to year, in terms of ensuring that we unlock the frozen post. The other one, Chair, was from yourself in relation to the consultation with DPME, AGSA doing a proactive review on our APP. Is it necessarily going to show an improvement? Chair, we are hoping, in fact, that's why we have requested that they proactively review, so that by the time we finalize the ATP, we have taken into consideration their comments. However, the actual issues normally arise in implementation. So we still have a responsibility as a department to monitor very closely the actual implementation of these various indicators of the ATP and achievement of the targets. And that must have a very clear portfolio of evidence if you have made an impact on the ground in terms of that achievement. So that's an area which is actually even steeper, but we are working very hard on it to ensure that then we improve as a department in terms of implementation. I think that's about it, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, it is now 1:30. Can we take a break and reconvene at 2:00?
Chair?
Minister?
Chair, I just wanted to ask if you have finished with our department and our DDGs. Could I request that they be excused so that they can go and attend to their jobs while we deal with the entities?
We are done with the department, Minister. When we reconvene, we are going straight to South African National Parks and Isimangaliso.
Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, and as such, we can release other officials of the department.
Thank you, Chair.
And in the role of ME Tourism, since I think 2015, and she is now the newly appointed CEO. And before, at some point, she was acting CEO and was in attendance at this committee. In the interest of time, Chair, I'm not going to introduce all our members, safely to say that the ones that we will probably see from the first time, it would be the acting CFO, Ms. Rebecca Pillay, as well as Mr. Oscar Mthimkhulu, who is the head of or the ME Kruger National Park. But the rest of the MEs are in attendance, and they will be assisting in answering questions as the CEO or maybe the CEO will handle all the questions, but it will up to her. But just to say that, Chair, that as the SANParks board, we are pleased to present the APP, which is our contribution as an organization to this last year of the current administration. Just a couple of points to note that we are still in our recovery path as an organization post-COVID. So we have, at the same time, we are noting the improvements which we had covered in when we came to present quarter three and quarter four. So we are on a growth trajectory, and which in itself has led to a little bit more things that we are doing in this APP or in this financial year. But we are not out of the woods yet. We have also, in the presentation, would cover things like how we link with the rest of government programs. And I think just quick specific areas, Honorable Chair and members, is that we want to strengthen our efforts in terms of tourism recovery and growth, and that is linked to our investment in infrastructure. The department and the minister have been kind and given us additional resources to improve for infrastructure investment, which really contributes to visitor experience in our national parks, but also help us to maintain existing infrastructure. And also we are in this APP starting to also include our own contribution towards the implementation of the newly approved white paper on biodiversity and sustainable use. We continue our efforts of strengthening wildlife crime, which is a matter that was dealt with at the beginning of the session. Just to make a comment there, Chair, as SANParks, you had asked us if when we present we could comment, that we, with the Rademeya report, would like to say that we've noted the report and we are in the process of studying it and processing it and looking at in more detail where we can, given the fact that I think through Mr. Rademeya's own admission that that it is not, Kruger National Park is not an isolated site of crime. And that we also, this is all part linked to organized crime, which means that as we prepare our response, we also need to link it with other law enforcement agencies and other parties that we are working with. And also noting that he did indicate that there had been a positive reception from our part. However, we would like to request that we provide a comprehensive response at a date to be determined by the committee. Those would be our comments on that report, and Honorable Chair. And then finally, we're also looking at how do we strengthen our capacity as an organization, because we're only able to deliver on the work of the APP and our mandate if we have a capable organization, both in terms of systems, processes, and also capable staff. And noted within that is issues of staff morale. Those things are all part of our priority areas that we are looking at in the APP. So without further ado, Honorable Chair,
recording in progress.
With your permission, I'm going to request then the CEO to start presentation, I think from slide 9, because I think in my summary I covered the slides before that. And over to you, Ms. Silo.
Good afternoon, and thank you for that introduction, Chairperson. Good afternoon to Honourable Minister, Honourable Deputy Minister, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, the DG.
Chair, the picture is not clear.
Okay, thank you. Yes.
I suspect honourable members want to see you, CEO, so that they can.
Yes, it looks like my screen is a bit blurred. I'm just trying to resolve that quickly. It looks better, I think.
It does.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. I'll just go back and start my greeting again. Honourable Chair, and good afternoon to you, and Honourable Minister, Deputy Minister, the DG, Chairperson of Sandparks, and Chairperson of other entities in this meeting today, the board members of Sandparks and other entities with us today, as well as the colleagues in general. As the chairperson has indicated, she would like for me to begin my presentation straight into the APP, and that's what we have in front of us. Can I go to the next slide? I'm going to skip, with your permission, Chairperson 9, number 10, because number 10 just speaks to the mission and the vision. Number 11 is also sharing information that you are relatively familiar with in terms of our locations and the number of employees we have in our parks. I will also skip this slide, as I trust that you are familiar with it, our context, which includes our mandate. This slide summarizes the four outcome goals in our APP, outcome goal number 1 being sustainable biodiversity and cultural heritage, outcome goal 2 improved diverse responsible tourism, outcome goal 3 speaks to sustainable socio-economic transformation, and outcome goal 4 is a very broad outcome, as you know, and it speaks to transformed organization through revenue, people, systems, and business processes. Next slide, please. I will also skip this slide. The chairperson has covered this, I believe, fairly adequately. Can I go to the next slide? Next slide, please. Thank you. Outcome goal number 1. Under outcome goal number 1, I will take you through our indicators under sub-outcome 1, which is protected area expansion. In this financial year, we aim to add 7,000 hectares to our national parks. With regards to sub-outcome goal number 2, which is effective and efficient management of national parks, we intend to assess 20 national parks and aim to achieve a MET score of 80% minimum. We'll also assess 6 marine protected areas, and 33% of those we intend to ensure that they achieve a MET score of more than 67%. With regards to the indicator of implementation of policies on elephant, rhino, lion and leopard, and that is related to the outcomes of the high-level panel, we will have a policy support implementation plan developed in this year and also ensure that 70% of our activities with regards to that implementation plan are implemented, and this will be a cumulative number. Sub-outcome goal number 3, degraded ecosystems rehabilitated. In this period, we intend to rehabilitate 25,200 initial hectares. We then will follow that up with 139,500 hectares to be rehabilitated. With regards to the wetlands, the intention is for us to rehabilitate 7,200 cubic meters of wetlands. Next slide, please. We move on to sub-outcome number 4, which is climate change vulnerability, reduced and climate resilience improved. We intend to assess 2 national parks for climate change vulnerability, as well as 2 national parks with regards to climate change adaptation, making sure that those are included in the park management plans, and ensure that we have priority actions for climate change adaptation identified for 2 parks. We intend to implement 90% of the annual green energy implementation plan in this year. With regards to sub-outcome 5, which is a framework towards improved management of cultural heritage, we intend to assess 2 national parks with regards to its cultural heritage resources, as well as ensure that we implement 90% of the annual cultural heritage action plan. Next slide, please. We're still on outcome goal number 1. Sub-outcome 8, sustainable populations of species of special concern monitored and increased. With regards to our rhino population, we have a target wherein we are ensuring that we will increase rhino population in identified 4 rhino areas at a percentage which is greater than 1% per annum. And this is with specific reference to Kruger National Park. In other parks, and we have 6 other rhino parks, we intend to push the rhino population growth at a 4% growth level. With regards to number of rhinos poached in Kruger National Park, as well as the 6 other rhino parks, we intend to reduce the number of rhinos poached in KNP to under 120 for the year, and the other 6 rhino parks to ensure that the number of rhinos poached is less than 5 animals. With regards to elephants, the target there is to reduce the number of elephants poached to 40 animals or less, with regards to the other 4 parks that we monitor, we reduce the number of elephants poached to less than 4. Next slide, please. We move on to outcome goal 2, which is improved diverse responsible tourism. Sub-outcome 7, which is improved tourism performance. Our annual target under customer satisfaction index rating, we are aiming at a 0.5% improvement on customer satisfaction. We intend to have an 11% growth on the number of visitors to our national parks year on year, and percentage increase in terms of accommodation occupancy, we are targeting 0.6% up on the previous year. We are targeting to implement 8 new and diverse tourism products. With regards to integrated marketing and communications plans and the number of interventions that we will roll out coming out of that plan, we've identified 6 marketing interventions, 5 communications interventions. We also have interventions that we are planning for improved hospitality service delivery standards, and the target there is 2 interventions. Next slide, please. Outcome, sub-outcome goal 8, improve responsible tourism. We intend to assess 6 national parks using our responsible tourism auditing framework. Next slide, please. We are moving on to outcome goal 3, which is sustainable social economic development. Sub-outcome goal 9, the transformation of wildlife economy through increased PDI participation. Regarding the number of animals to be delivered to communities and individual emerging game farmers, our target for this year is 600 animals. With regards to the number of full-time equivalent employment created through EPWP, the target is 5,140 FTEs. The next indicator is a breakdown of those jobs that will be created through EPWP. With the youth, we're targeting 5,160, with women in EPW program, 4,580, and people with disabilities, 145 is our target. Sub-outcome 10, improved participation of PDIs in the business of SANParks. The number of SMEs contracted for provision of goods and services through EPWP, our target is 450 SMEs. Then we also have a target with regard to percentage of goods and services contracted to EMEs and QSEs. And our target is that 40% of all annual goods and services contracted to EMEs, and that 15% of annual goods and services will be procured through QSEs, and that is in specific reference to procurement that is below 1 million. Next slide. We look at sub-outcome goal 11, which is improved participation. It is a continuation of the previous one. We are also tracking the percentage of expenditure on affirmative procurement, and this year's target is 80% of procurement will be spent on designated groups. Sub-outcome goal 12, increased access to education and skills development opportunities. We are targeting to train more than 120 beneficiaries from targeted groups. In addition, we are intending to ensure that more than 450 schools are able to access our national parks for educational purposes. Next slide. This is sub-outcome 13, which is our sustained corporate social investment towards community development. We have a target for the number of individual communities where social legacy projects have been completed, and these are 6 communities. Sub-outcome 14, improved participation of land claimants in SANParks business. Our target in terms of our claimant beneficiation schemes being developed and implemented, 30% of activities in the Gokwa Land Claim Beneficiation Package annual plan will be implemented in this financial year, as well as 30% of activities in the ADO Land Claim annual implementation plan will be implemented in this financial year. Next slide. I move on to outcome goal number 4, which is sustainable and transformed organization through revenue, people, systems, and business processes. sub-outcome number 15, we talk about financial sustainable organization. We have a target of $120 million for revenue raise through resource mobilization. We are aiming at a 20% increase in our actual 2022-23 revenue raised through tourism performance. And we are aiming at 4 million rand as a revenue target for wildlife sales. With regards to sub-outcome 16, transformed and capable human capital, we are targeting 41% of women in management positions. We are intending to increase the percentage of people with disabilities employed by Sanparks by 1.1%, and to increase the number of black people as a percentage of management to 64%. Next slide. Sub-outcome 17, transformed and capable human capital, we intend to spend 1% of our percentage of payroll on skills development programs. Our human capital management strategy, we intend to implement it at least 80% of the annual operational plan. And we intend to introduce 80% of the initiatives that we have in our program for performance management or change, enhancing the culture of performance management. 80% of those initiatives that have been identified will be implemented in this financial year. We will run 8 annual wellness interventions in this year towards the management of employee health and well-being. Next slide. And with regards to sub-outcome 18, which is efficient and innovative systems, we will implement 1 cyber control in this financial year. With regards to sound corporate governance and qualified audit opinion, is our annual target. We intend to implement a minimum of 75% of the approved internal audit plan, and to reflect a 95% implementation of the approved ERM maturity improvement and annual implementation plan, as well as achieving level 5 of maturity rating. We will implement 95% of our ethics maturity improvement and annual implementation plan in this year as well as ensuring that we implement 100% of our integrated compliance monitoring and reporting systems. Next slide. We are aiming to have 75,000 or more free entrants to our Sanparks Week this year, which happens in September. And under sub-outcome 21, appropriate and well-maintained infrastructure, the intention is to implement 90% of our annual infrastructure program. Next slide. The next slide speaks to strategic risks, which are relatively self-explanatory, and I will not go through them with your permission, Chair. I would like to then go straight to the budget and request the acting CEO, Ms. Rebecca Pile, to present the budget for this financial year. Thank you.
I suspect you wanted to say the acting CFO.
I said the acting CFO. Oh, yes, the acting CFO.
CEO, you are so used to acting. It's okay, we understand.
thank you, Chair. Apologies. Ms. Pilly, over to you. Thank you.
CEO, and afternoon, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Honourable Minister, Deputy Minister and colleagues, I will take you through our budget for 23-24. If we look at our total revenue, we're sitting just under 4 billion, which is represented by 60% of self-generated revenue of 2.3 billion and non-exchange revenue of 40%, which is 1.5 billion. Overall, our revenue has increased by 27% when we compare to the say, to the budget last year, where we were just over 3 billion rand budget for revenue. If we can go to the next slide, please. So included in the budget for revenue, we also have a 700 million that was allocated as a grant from DFFE. This will greatly assist. It's specifically for our infrastructure maintenance. We also have projected increases in most of our revenue streams, which is due to a projection of more visitors visiting our parks. And so that's our revenue budget. If you look at our performance over the years, sorry, if you could just thank you. If you look at our performance over the years, with the green being the budget for 23-24, you can see that it has increased compared to the prior year, and specifically in the 21-22 year, where we were impacted by COVID. So although not there yet, we are making a turn towards, improving on our revenue generation. If we look at the expenditure side, if you can just move, please. We have covered this one. If you can just go to the graph, next one. Thank you. If you look at our expenditure is projected at 3.8 billion. That will be the first slide that we've passed already, with the biggest cost drivers being human resources and operating costs. Human resources, which contributes to 44%, which is 1.5 billion, and operating costs of 1.1 billion towards our total expenditure of 3.8 billion. We also have, if we compare our budget for last financial year, we have increased our expenditure budget by 14%, mainly due to increased maintenance costs, and that will be, you can see it has increased from the prior year by 42%, mainly resulting from the expenditure we expected to incur for the increased grant from DSSE. We also have operational expenditure, which has increased now that we're expecting to, move towards better tourism generation and a performance of Sanparks. We have increased our operating expenses by 14% due to ongoing commitments, fuel costs, and other day-to-day expenditure. Thanks. Thanks, members. There's our budget. I have covered this. Thank you.
Honorable members, that is the presentation of South African National Parks. May I invite you to engage them? Honorable Weber, you'll be the first. Honorable Brian, you'll be the second. Okay, proceed, Honorable Weber.
Thank you, Chair. I only have two questions. The one first question was sort of answered by the acting CFO, and that was when you showed the 11% increase in the number of visitors to the park, my question would have been, how does that compare to before COVID? So I would like to see where we are now and where we were, because the revenue just showed me that we're not yet there where we were, and I would like to know how far we are from before COVID came so that we can pick up on that. Then my second question is, I was, and it may be inappropriate, but I do want to ask the following. We had presentations on Kruger National Park specifically, but one of the biggest issues in all our parks is security. Now I look at your budget items and it's maintenance and it's administration and it's operational. Now I presume that security is falling under operations. So I put a request forward that can we maybe make a budget item for security, finances and budget for security, that we can see in context exactly where our security and financing for that stands, because that is why we have the parks, is for tourism. And if the security of the animals are not there and they're poached and everything, we have a problem. And then tourism won't come. So I would like to see, in comparison to all the other line items, where security is standing and how much money really goes into security. It might be my fault. I just look now at that five items that I think CFO gave us. But that's a request from my side that we separately can deal with the security and see what that all entails and how much money goes to that. Thank you very much, Jay.
Thank you very much, Honorable Webb, Honorable Brian.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and let me also just take the opportunity to congratulate the new CEO. I also believe she is the first female CEO of Sanparks, so really hearty congratulations, and I know you have a big task ahead of you, but we will certainly do our best to support you where we can. Chairperson, I know one gets confused with acting. You yourself were acting as a chairperson for a long time, so at least we don't have to have the acting anymore. The more of the acting titles we can do away with, I think the better. Certainly makes things a bit easier. So, Ms. Yako, you mentioned that Sanparks is going to provide a comprehensive response to the Rademeyer report. That's fantastic. And as you mentioned, we just need to settle on a date for that. Chairperson, I would request then, as per Ms. Yako's offer, to provide that comprehensive response to Mr. Rademeyer's report. If we can set that down for a date and also ensure, as was discussed earlier this morning, that the representatives from the South African Police Service and potentially the South African Police Service, the committee on policing, also be invited to that meeting. I know this is something that I've raised on many occasions before, and I'm sure I'm probably being a little bit irritating with this one, but we still firmly believe that the target for rhino poaching should be zero. I think it is good that those numbers are going down and that your targets are lower. One hopes that it's because the rate of poaching is dropping and not merely the numbers, but we really should be looking at a zero total. That should be the KPI, is zero, and any rhinos that are poached, be it in KMP or anywhere else, should take us into the red. So anyway, we're really going to start focusing properly on ensuring that we root out corruption and poaching of rhino, as unrealistic as it might appear at present. That should be our target, should be zero. I just want to find out, in terms of the budget, we have found out that there were 87 ranger posts vacant last year. Five of those have apparently been filled. We're still sitting with 82, although I see some other interviews have been conducted to employ additional rangers. But I just want to find out if that budget provision is sufficient to cover those remaining 82 ranger posts. I mean, they have been identified, and it is a serious issue. So I just want to find out if the budget covers those 82 remaining ranger posts. And then just a question, Mr. Rademeyer mentioned that around about 86% of staff are currently staying outside Kruger National Park at present. But we see that around about 10 million is being spent on staff accommodation. I'm just trying to reconcile those two numbers. Is that money being spent on building the new accommodation or the improved accommodation? Or what is that number? Because it seems a little bit, the two things don't seem to match up. Do we have a number of how many staff are currently staying inside KMP? And I think that's it for now. Thanks very much, Chair and CEO.
Thank you very much, Honorable Brian. Honorable Winkler.
Thank you to the Chairperson, and thank you for the report.
So the first question I have regards the number of parks assessed for climate change vulnerability. As part of the vulnerability assessment, is there a component that deals with the probability, increasing probability of drought as we see severe climate impacts? Because obviously this speaks to the management of populations in these reserves. With regard to the annual green energy implementation plan, what does that exactly speak to as well? If we could just get some clarity on that. When you say that the rhino population is increasing at greater than 1% per annum, so how is this benchmark derived? And is this the only feasible growth that we can look at in terms of rhino population, and why? And similarly, with regard to the elephant poaching statistics, like my colleague Honorable Bryant has mentioned, to say that it's only been less than 40, it's an improvement, but it's definitely not the sort of ambition that we should be looking at. So what has sort of been implemented in terms of how to address the elephant poaching? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Winkler. Are there further takers, Honorable Member? Okay, can we get the responses here?
Thank you, Chair. I'll also request my colleagues who are present here to assist with some of these questions. With regards to the number of the increase in the number of visitors to parks being at 11%, the question from Honorable Weber was, where are we currently? We are at 4.9 million visitors, which is an 80% improvement on our numbers, or rather 80% of where we were at pre-pandemic. So we are very comfortable that we are recovering. I'd like for the ex-CFO to speak about the item of security not being a specific line item. And I will call on Dr. Howard to address issues to do with the poaching targets. Dr. Howard Hendricks. So there were two questions, one on the rhino population and another on the elephant. And Mr. Property Mugwena to speak to the green energy implementation. And Mr. Mtimkulu, who is our managing executive at Kruger National Park, to speak to methods to do with the housing of staff inside and outside of Kruger. So we'll start off with acting CFO, Ms. Pillay. The issue of security being a specific line item in our budget.
Thank you, CEO. With regard to that, remember, is correct, it is not specifically ring-fenced for security, and we will have to get back to you with the figure, because the security figure would be sitting in employee cost, maintenance, and operating costs. It is a good suggestion taken for noting going forward, and it is something we can consider, but it is spread across the different categories of expenditure, and it's not isolated to one area.
Well, thank you, ma'am. Mr. Mtimkulu, are you in a position to address the issue of the staff housing and the question of specific to 86% of our rangers staying outside the park? And with the other question being the 10 million that we've budgeted for staff housing, how are we going to utilize that? Thank you.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, and the Minister, Honorable Minister and colleagues. I would just want to remind Honorable Members that during the presentation, presentation that was done this morning by Mr. Rodemeyer, it did indicate on the condition of our staff in terms of, you know, working condition, and part of that is the accommodation. And some of you might have visited Kruger National Park, and you will have realized that the kind of staff accommodation that was allocated, especially to lower rank African staff members, is not acceptable. So the budget is really to try and accommodate and improve the staff living condition, especially for the essential services staff members who are expected to be inside the park 24 hours. So the budget that is allocated for that is really to improve the staff accommodation to a reasonable accommodation. And this has a bearing even in terms of our transformation, because of our living condition that are found to be unacceptable. Thank you, Chair.
I'm sorry, I was muted. I was requesting Mr. Mutumkulu that while he's still on the floor to please address the issue of the ranger posts and whether the budget provision is sufficient to cover the filling of this of these vacancies.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Again, the current budget allocation is based on the prioritization of the position. It is currently not enough to fill all vacant positions, but it's something that we're working on to say over the years, because we have to take them for training so that we can fill those positions. They are not readily available, but in terms of the budget itself, it's not sufficient to fill all positions. Thank you.
Thank you.
CEO, I'm not too sure if it's only me.
Yes, Chair.
Or we only heard Mr. Mutumkulu when he said thank you, all of us.
Oh, I heard him. He was very audible. I'm not.
Yeah, we also heard him, Chair.
Oh, okay. Then it's fine. It's only on my side. Let's proceed.
Okay, Chair. Thank you. I will request Mr. Mokwena to speak to the Green Energy Implementation Plan. The question being, what are the elements that are contained in that plan? And then followed after that by Dr. Hendricks to speak about rhino population and elephant poaching.
Thank you, CEO, and good afternoon, honorable members, Minister and Deputy Minister, and colleagues and all members who are here. So SANParks has an energy efficiency strategy, which was approved by the board of SANParks, and it was developed by all internal and external stakeholders. So the strategy itself demands that we need to have a plan in terms of implementation, or to make sure that we realize that plan. So one of the objectives of that strategy is to or that plan is to deal with the energy saving on the demand side, to reduce the energy cost of our operations. And that's one critical part of the strategy. And then the second point of it is to replacement of fossil fuels. As you will know that across the parks, you will find some parks not using energy efficiency mechanism, or still using fossil fuels. The likes of Galagadi is still using diesel. So it's to replace that with energy efficiency mechanisms such as solar. The third objective is to secure funding for the sustainability of the plan. So we've started now to roll out some of this in some of the parks, in the likes of Galagadi. I know that we'll be putting some solar plants. We've installed some in Dangwa and in the KNP. So the plan
consist of those elements of that strategy. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Hendricks.
Thank you, CE, and thank you, Chair, and good afternoon, honorable members. The question around climate change and whether our climate vulnerability assessments, if we are able to assess increasing in the possibility of droughts. I think it's a very good question, and thank you for that question. The way we perform our vulnerability assessments is, in fact, at it's a very comprehensive assessment, and it's pretty much at three different levels. It is obviously to understand what are the implications for climate change and what are those implications for Sandpox as an organization, but more specifically, how resilient are those specific national parks to any form of climate change and the adaptation responses thereto. But also an important element of our assessments includes neighboring communities, including for that matter other stakeholders. And then that the question is to ask, how do we then build climate change resilience in neighboring communities as well? And then I think the last part is around the communication of it. So Honorable Winkler, yes, the drought is part of our biological aspects of climate change, regardless of socioeconomic changes within our national parks and around our national parks. But certainly droughts do form part of it, as much as wildfires and all those other environmental aspects that relate to our national parks. Whether we always spot on, whether we can say with accuracy whether a drought is going to happen, obviously our models can only predict as accurate as the data that we have available. But yes, certainly droughts form part of that and many of the other environmental factors that form part of that as well. CE, there was also a question around is it only possible to, or 1%, why is it only feasible, whether that is a feasible growth level?
And how
one,
and also,
Chair, am I audible? Can you hear me?
Yes, but there's an echo. I was saying the other part of the question is how do we determine that percentage?
Yes, Chair. Chair, so the 1% is obviously for Kruger, and then we have a different percentage for other parks. The 1% is, you'll note that the wording specifically highlighted in the core areas. We've identified, we know more or less where the rhinos are in Kruger. We've identified more or less the six combinations for the different groupings of rhino, specifically in those core areas. And based on our modeling, we can quite comfortably say that we would be able to increase the population with 1% in those specific core areas once we've considered possible poaching events in those particular areas. So it's based on the modeling that we've done, based on what we know, and therefore we can quite confidently indicate that we will be growing that population with 1%. You will note that our performances have always been slightly higher, so we anticipate it might be better, but we definitely predict a 1% growth rate in those populations in the four areas. Thank you, CE.
Thank you, Dr. Hannah. Chair, I trust that we have captured all the questions that we were asked. I'll be led by you. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Weber and Honorable Brian, don't follow up.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm actually follow up on one of Honorable Brian's questions. I want to know if 86% of people working in Sandbox are outside, and one of the benefits of actually working in the park is to have accommodation, etc. Who are the people living outside by choice, and is the cost of living then outside the park for the VIN account, or who is paying for them if the accommodation is not viable for them inside? Who is carrying that cost? Thank you very much.
you, Honorable Weber, Honorable Brian, followed by Honorable Tanju.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. Yeah, Chairperson, I think it's unfortunate to hear that the budget hasn't been provided for those additional ranger posts. I wouldn't even say they're not even additional. They're vacant posts. And I think it is very difficult for the public to take SANParks seriously when they say they want to combat rhino poaching, when they're not even making adequate budgetary provision to fill vacant posts that exist for rangers. Rangers are the front line that prevent these incursions and the poaching of our wild animals, not only rhino, all sorts of other animals, and the theft of wildlife. And it is hard to fathom why SANParks is not making that provision. And then in the same breath saying that they're comfortable with having 120 rhinos poached every year. One can understand why members of the public are struggling to align themselves with those two schools of thought. Thanks, Chair.
Chair.
Hey, Honorable Ganjo. Oh, Honorable Minister.
Chair, I want to respond, but take the rest of your questions first.
Oh, Honorable Ganjo.
Thank you, Chair. No, mine is just follow up on the issue of accommodation in so far as Kruger National Park is concerned. I know that when we last time we visited, they were busy with the construction of some of the houses. I just want to check how far are they in terms of the completion of the project and in terms of getting the completion from 0 to 100%. Percentage would they say it is in terms of its completion? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Ganjo. Commissioner Minister.
Thanks very much, Chair. Chair, I just want to make 2 points. I think the first point one wants to make is that honourable members should not forget what happened during the COVID pandemic. In 2020, in order to prevent us having to close SANParks as a government entity, I had to take R1 billion out of the department's budget and use that R1 billion to plug the holes in the SANParks budget. And the reason is that historically, this has been a well-performing entity that has not been dependent on government bailouts and has generated 80% of its own revenue. Since the pandemic, the institution has struggled. And no government institution is permitted to table a deficit budget. So what that means is that the institution has to cut its coat according to its cloth. We absolutely agree that posts, ranger posts in particular, must be filled. But it's very important for honourable members to recognise that we have not fully recovered from the pandemic yet, and we cannot run ourselves into a situation where the ratio of staff salaries to other operational costs is exceeded. Because once you do that, you can pay salaries and nothing else. There are many municipalities in our country in that situation. There are also a number of government entities in that situation. And there is a conscious decision by the leadership of SANParks that we're not going to get into that situation. So these ranger posts have to be filled. No one is disagreeing with that. But what we are saying is that the ranger posts must be filled at a pace that the organization can afford. Because there are many other costs
which are also essential for the running of the institution. The second point I want to make is that we have indicated we're going to give a full report, response to the Rademeyer report. Part of what that will involve is looking at his statistics, looking at our statistics, looking at his points about accommodation, looking at our accommodation policies. And we are not closed to options, but we would want an opportunity to consider the important points raised in his report and to respond in full. So I wouldn't want us to go extensively into that at this stage. I want us to give the institution an opportunity to consider what was put before it and then to be able to respond. Otherwise, let me hand back to the staff of SANPOX. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. Honourable Chair, I'm just going to request my colleagues once again to respond very quickly to some of the questions, taking into consideration what the Minister has said about us coming back to Parliament with a fuller briefing. If Liz McCott, who is our COO, can take the questions regarding the housing issue. And I'll also ask Mr. Mthimkhulu to address the question regarding the construction and refurbishment of staff housing in the Kruger. Thank you. I believe the Minister has adequately responded to the question regarding the budget for the Ranger position. So over to you, Mrs. McCourt, and then to Mr. Mthimkhulu. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Thank you, CEO. Good afternoon, Honourable Minister, Honourable Deputy Minister, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, our board members and colleagues across all of the different entities still present and the department. Yes, Chair, in response to the question about the structuring of salaries and remuneration and cost of living, in some of our remote parks, of course, we have most of our staff staying inside the park because there is not alternative accommodation necessary available in the immediate communities. In other areas where there is accommodation available, we do focus on essential staff staying inside the park. Of course, the cost of living for those staying inside the park is much lower than those staying outside of parks, and therefore we have a different salary structure in terms of the salaries for those that are staying inside the park versus those that are staying outside of parks. And this does not currently take into consideration the real cost of living dynamics in the different geographical areas, but it is mostly based on a type of housing allowance and travel allowance which people would not have necessary when they are staying in the park. So we do have two pay scales, one talking to people staying inside or staff staying inside of the park and the other staying outside of the park. One of the bigger socioeconomic concerns that we have in terms of people staying within parks their entire career is that they are often found in an undesirable position once they retire, and the inside the staff, inside the park accommodation is therefore no longer available to them. And that is one of the issues that we are considering currently in our future visions around staff accommodation. Just in terms of the 10 million allocation to staff housing, I must just emphasize that this is not earmarked at the Kruger only, and it is a mixture of building new accommodation and upgrading and changing the nature of the accommodation. The specific project that Honourable Gunch was, for example, referring to was moving away from hostel-type accommodations to freestanding housing. housing accommodations that can include family members living with the employees in the park. So the mix, it is a mixture of new infrastructure as well as refurbishment and maintenance of existing staff accommodation. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Mr. McCott. Chair, we trust that we have answered the last batch of questions. Mr. Mtimkulu, would you like to add something? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think the my colleague, Liz, has covered most of the questions that were asked. I just wanted to add from Kruger National Park perspective that in the 2021-22 financial year, we upgraded around about 129 staff units. And in the last financial year, which is 2022-23, we upgraded about 50 staff accommodation units. So these are just existing where we are upgrading from a hostel communal ablution setup to a more respectful and dignified accommodation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mtimkulu. Honorable Chair, we have responded to the questions. Thank you.
Did you hear the question of Honorable Ganto?
Yes, Chair. Our understanding was that it's the response that Mr. Mtimkulu has just heard, has just shared with us, which was regarding the construction of homes and the refurbishment of homes, unless there's a section of the question I missed. Honorable Chair.
Okay. Well, if she's satisfied, she won't come back. Honorable Brian?
No, I wanted to check in terms of its completion. Ne? I know that there are busy refurbishments and all that, but at some point we need to just finish the project. So how far are you with that in terms of completing this project? We can't just build forever. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, please note that, Honorable Brian.
Thanks very much, Chair. Just on a slightly different tack, if I may, while we have Sam Fox here, just a very quick one. I know as a result of those terrible fires that happened on Table Mountain 2 years ago, there was a lot of devastation and destruction. The Mostert's Mill has been rebuilt and it's looking fantastic. I know there was a private group that put money together and had that repaired. But the old tea room, which is a very important tourist attraction for all of those visiting Table Mountain on the Rhodes Memorial side, is still hasn't been awarded a tender. I know the first tender process apparently was unsuccessful, and they're prepping the second tender. I would just ask that this be given priority when looking at that area by the CEO, if possible, just taking into consideration the importance that this has for tourism and revenue for that particular part of Table Mountain. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Brian. Can you start with the one of Honorable Kancho and then conclude with the one of Honorable Brian?
Honorable Chair, if it is acceptable to you, can we revert with proper numbers, accurate numbers regarding the question about how far are we from Honorable Bancho? I would be uncomfortable for us to provide a knee-jerk reaction to that. So, with your permission, sir. And Honorable Bryant, the matter of the tender for the old tea room on Table Mountain being prioritized is noted. Thank you.
No, but CEO, Honorable Ganja is saying, when we went to visit Kruger, there was a building that had already been started. Now, what he's asking, are we at 50%, are we at 75%, or are we at 90%?
I hear you.
he's just been cut with load shedding, and that is why I was requesting your indulgence, Honourable Chair, to ensure that we have accurate numbers that we're sharing with yourself in response to that question. Yes, so my colleague in the Kruger who has the information at his fingertips has just been cut off due to load shedding.
Apologies. No, that's fair enough. No problem. Can we just get that response? I'm not too sure. I think it's not a very difficult question. 20%, 30%, 50%, 75%, something. Perhaps in writing, if you are unable to get it before we conclude this meeting. Okay. Thank you very much to the leadership of SANParks. Can we then move to Isimangaliso? Minister, you want to introduce the team of Isimangaliso?
Chair, good afternoon once again to yourself, to Deputy Minister, to all the honourable members, and also to all the colleagues who are still online from DFFE and our entities. First of all, Chair, with your permission, I would want to release the SANParks team from the meeting, if that's acceptable to you, Chair.
Yeah, it's okay. I think we're done with them. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Chair, I think that you would probably in the beginning have received the apology of the CEO of Isimangaliso, Mr. Bukstini. I think that honourable members are probably aware that he lost his mother yesterday afternoon, and obviously we did have an opportunity to extend condolences to him. So he would not be with us. But the CFO of Isimangaliso is with us, and she will be doing the presentation. The one suggestion I would make is that if there are detailed questions about the follow-up with regard to the estuary mouth, that we respond to those questions in writing. The issue, Chair, is that on matters of EIS, I'm the appeal authority, so I wouldn't want to get involved in the issues here in case there is an appeal. Mr. Bukasini had indicated that there may be a requirement for more detailed information, and he would want to give you that information in writing. So that is all I would want to say. But otherwise, let me hand over to the CFO of Isimangaliso and request that, with your permission, they can do the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Minister. Please pass our sincerest condolences to the CEO of Isimangaliso. We wish them strength during these difficult times. Do we have the chairperson of the board?
Yes, I'm your chairperson.
Over to you.
My humble apologies. I didn't see Nkosi when I looked in the meeting, but otherwise, let me hand over.
Okay, no, thank you very much, Minister. Thank you very much, Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee, Honorable Minister, Deputy Minister, fellow Board Chairperson from other entities, DG in absentia, Executive Officers, and everyone in participation to this meeting in the afternoon. Thank you very much, Chairperson, for affording us an opportunity to present as a Simangaliso. And thank you very much, Minister, for giving that background, that because of the CEO is not with us in the meeting, we might not be able to take all the questions, but I think we'll cover what we can cover as an entity, since we got two members that are in attendance, the CFO and one of the executive, Lungi Duli. I think we'll be able to answer some of the questions that we'll present before you. As an entity, Chairperson, we had planned for 58 output indicators for 23-24 financial year. The 58 output indicators are divided in programs so that it can make our work in order and achievable. We have a corporate support service. We had 12. It's been achieved. Biodiversity conservation, we had 11. It's been achieved. Tourism and business development, we had 14. It's been achieved. Social economic environment and development, we had 21. It's been achieved. So the whole total of 58 is been achieved accordingly. The implementation of St. Lucia Month Panel of Aspect report, we got some recommendation that are extended accordingly in the plan. Thus far, we are happy to implement the action plan in that regard. The plan will continue to make a dent towards addressing unemployment through the environmental protection and infrastructure program, the youth employment sector transformation, gender-based violence strategy implementation will be continued to be addressed through Khunsebenza internship program and environmental protection and infrastructure program. The plan will continue implement commercialization as an approach to identify own contribution to COPEX and outpex. With this being said, Chairperson, I will let the CFO to give more info to the presentation so that we can cover the most presentation that it was prepared to be presented to the portfolio committee. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think in that note, I will then hand over to the CFO. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson of the Board, and thank you, Chairperson of the Portfolio. Good afternoon, members of the Portfolio. I hope I'm audible. Thank you so much for writing the presentation for Isimangaliso Wetland Park, and thank you, Minister, for the opportunity, and also Deputy Minister, for the opportunity to afford Isimangaliso to do the presentation on the annual performance for this current year, which is 23-24, to Parliament. As for the department mentioned, we are in our last year of the strategic 5-year strategic plan, so we are finalizing our 5-year plan in this financial year. So we are looking at closing the gaps where we had planned for the previous 5 years in this year. As Isimangaliso is in the presidential poverty note, our most challenge, if we go to the next slide, is that our most challenge is that the area where Isimangaliso operates is having challenges around the unemployment. As you will be aware that Umkhanyakude alone is sitting at about 42% unemployment rate, which include unemployment of the youth, 51%. And in order for us to address these issues, EPWP in particular programs are able to assist us to achieve or to contribute to the district development model tool, which if you look at the next slide, with the budget that we have provided of 349 million, we are able to extend into SME of about 311 and create created job opportunities of about 4,700 in the previous year, as well as putting at least of that amount of 4,300, 52% was for the youth, and 46% of it was the woman. If we can go to the next slide, if we look at our previous 3 years, we have been starting from 2020 to 2021, we've been achieving 100%, and also in the previous year of 2021-22, we've been achieving 100% of the 57 targets that we had out of the 4 programs that we have. And in this financial year, we also prepared in line with these programs. And in terms of the forecast in this 23-24 financial year, as the minister indicated, we have the outcome of the panel, which in this particular year, we are implementing the recommendation of the St. Lucia Mount expert report. And that is one of the key points that we are focusing in the 2023. And the second one, we continue to focus on addressing the unemployment through our EPWP programs, which include Working for Water, Working for the Wetland, Khunsebenza, and including all our infrastructure projects. We also looking at increasing or implementing our commercialization strategy in addressing the issue around the financial sustainability of the park. Though we are talking about at this stage, because currently our funding is grant dependent, but we want to start to implement our commercialization plan and our strategy to see we can take some of the amounts we have from our own contribution to CAPEX and operational expenditure. Changes in our APP, in particular, in this year, there is nothing major that we have changed from our previous year APP. In this particular year, we are focusing also on our audit outcomes. So I would like to, at this point, on this slide, allow our strategy office, strategy manager, to take us through in detail on what we have in our APP. Over to Lungi Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, CFO. Good afternoon, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, Honorable Minister, Deputy Minister, Director General, CEOs, President, and colleagues. I will be taking you through to the details of the APP. The first slide is just showing alignment of the government goals versus the strategic outcomes of the park and aligning those to the 4 programs. The NCT has got 4 programs. Program 1 is corporate support. The outcome there is compliance with legislation, effective financial management, and key risk mitigated. The first output indicator is unqualified audit opinion with no matters of emphasis. The second is 95% expenditure of the allocated budget. We plan to pay our creditors within 30 days as per the PFMA compliance. We plan to collect from our debtors within 60 days. We will be implementing the procurement plan 100% of that as per the allocated budget. Compliance with key statutory requirements 100%. B is spent on majority black-owned suppliers 80% is the target. For human capital, we are saying we will submit the web page skills plan to the relevant sector within the prescribed time frame so that the staff are capacitated and are developed within the web page and their portfolios. 100% of employee performance contracts will be concluded as per the performance management policy. 1 occupational health and safety assessment will be conducted. When it comes to business efficiency, we plan to review the ICC governance framework
and this will aid us in effective information, communication and technology systems which will support the business core, the organization's core business and mandate. When it comes to putting Isimangaliso on the world map to make it a world-renowned World Heritage Park, we will continue to release news flashes and publish those newspapers, 20 of those. Program 2 is the core mandate of the park, biodiversity conservation. The outcome there is to ensure that biodiversity threats are mitigated and the park World Heritage Site status remains untouched. We have got the Green Energy Program strategy, which we are implementing this day. We will continue to implement it. Unauthorized land enforcement strategy, we will continue to implement it. We will continue to monitor biodiversity so that management can take informed decisions. We will have action plans attached to those three indicators. We will continue to honor the management agreement between Isimangaliso and Ezenzelo KZN-Y9-FGN. They are our conservation management partner. We will have four meetings in that regard. We will continue to do environmental audits with our concessionaires throughout the park, 12 of those. Environmental monitor, which is a response to youth unemployment, 130 of those through the grants from the department. We will continue to clear 25,000 hectares of the alien plants. We will rehabilitate 2,000 cubic meters of wetlands. We will continue to clean the coastline, 320 of the coastline. Then when it comes to the buffer zone, to ensure that the buffer zone is protected and is not tampered with, we will comment on the person on the application towards the development within the buffer zone 100%, and there will be no unauthorized development or activities within the park. We will comment with regard to those 100%. Tourism and business development, this is the income generator. This is where infrastructure projects, implementation and commercialization strategies nested. We will maintain 30 kilometers of the road as an effort to respond to the commercialization strategy and to ensure that there is access to the resorts within the park. We will also ensure reserve integrity through maintaining the fence 20 kilometers. We will continue to implement the tourism and commercialization strategy, which we have started this year, and also market the park as the destination of choice through 5 collaterals, 3 tourism trade engagements, 2 special events, 6 editorials, 4 media junkets, and 500 media social media posts through Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We also endeavor to ensure that there is visits paid by the non-paying guests, 96,000 of those, because we've got a suite of stakeholders that we would want to visit the park using different methodologies to make sure that we have non-paying guests to the park. We also have paying visitor entries who contribute to other income towards the park, 180,000. We aim to generate our own revenue, 25 million in this financial year, and also to have one visitor market research completed, because we need to get an understanding of the perceptions out there about our visitors so that we can respond accordingly. We will be maintaining the park estate 100% as per the action plan. The last program, 4, is our stakeholder engagement public relations program. We aim to improve socioeconomic benefits and conditions of communities living adjacent inside and abutting the park. We have a number of stakeholders which we engage through meetings.
we will be having four fishing cooperative meetings, four people in parks meetings, four Amakosi Forum meetings, 24 traditional council meetings, 8 land claims and co-management meetings, 12 municipality and ward council meetings, 68 meetings are set aside for other community groups. We will also be addressing or contributing to the gender-based violence strategy implementation through ensuring that 55% of female beneficiaries are supported through various programs, 30 youth beneficiaries are supported. We will be contributing towards unemployment through creating 550 full-time equivalent jobs through the EP program. 1,250 beneficiaries will be trained through the NQF aligned training program. 1,400 will undergo non-accredited training. 200 participants will undergo skills development programs under a suite of our projects. 100 people will be participating in our rural enterprise program. Then when it comes to bursaries and tertiary support, we will be ensuring that at least 10 new first year students are receiving bursaries from Ms. Mangalis. Then we will also be supporting those students, ensuring that the pass mark remains 75% in the yearly modules. We've got an environmental education program where we ensure that schools are visited and are told what is East Mangaliso and what is it about, and also our partners. We also have youth Rhino ambassadors participating in environmental awareness activities with 50 them. We also ensure that the leadership structures which are part of East Mangaliso and those that are abutting the park are also included in our conservation awareness efforts. So we will be ensuring that at least 2 are participating. Environmental calendar days will ensure that at least 2 events are celebrated, since Mangaliso is a World Heritage Park and also a wetland of Ramsar importance. When it comes to youth unemployment and unemployment at large, we will still ensure that at least 200 beneficiaries are part of the National Home Surveillance Program. When we come to risk areas, we've cited some key risk areas for East Mangaliso. We don't want to lose the World Heritage Site status. We want to ensure that we implement the stakeholder engagement strategy to ensure that our relations with stakeholders are healthy. We also want to look at financial insustainability. We also want to ensure that our technology systems are not abused, and these are enabling us to ensure business efficiency. We're also looking into ensuring that at least we get an unqualified audit opinion with no matters of emphasis. And we're also looking after a safe working environment and also skilled and competent workforce. I would like to end there, Chairperson, Honorable Minister, Deputy Minister, colleagues, and hand over to CFO to dive into the financial matters. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to conclude on around our outcome, output indicators, we just want to indicate that our output indicators are funded through the grant allocation from the department, of which the total revenue of the financial year is 349 million, which the following year, which is 367. And of course, as I've mentioned, is that the grants, the entity is dependent on the grant, as you will see that it is 90% of the funding that we have comes from the grant, and in
internally generated revenue is sitting at about 25 million, and which is like 10% if you look at in total of our internally generated park revenue. But because of in this particular year, we want to increase our marketing as well as the implementation of our commercialization strategy, where we are talking about triple P. I would like us to go to the next slide, which indicates the total budget that we are looking at. As you would see, in the previous year, there was more money coming from Working for Water, and which came from the department. As a result of that, because of this financial year, it's less than the previous year, but we will be sitting at about 349 million in this financial year, which we are talking about the APP for this year. As I've mentioned, in terms of the expenditure, lines around where we have reduced, if you can go to the next slide, on expenditure analysis, we look at the contractual cost, such as your maintenance, security, your fire protection. It is provided in our budget. And in terms of the employees, we are looking at about new 10 vacant posts, which are included in our budget, which talks to, in particular, six of those are talking to the land care managers, which are to be employed for us to be able to do the Working for Water program in a correct way. So this is our expenditure analysis and our budget. I don't know whether I'm heard, but I see that our screen is not moving. So, okay, that is where I was. Thank you so much, Chairperson. That is for Isma Maliso.
Thank you very much. Lungin Duli, please be kind to switch your mic off. Thank you. Honorable members, that is a presentation of Ismangaliso Wetland Park Authority. May I request that you engage it? Honorable Winkler, you'll be the first. Please proceed,
thank
Honorable
you,
Winkler.
Thank you, I appreciate it. Thank you for the presentation. What I'd just like to query on is definitely what is happening with the farms in that St. Lucia area, you know, where there was the massive flooding from the river. And I know the minister had an engagement there with COCTA, and I just wondered if there's been any progress since that visit. The second issue is on the land encroachment. I saw a particular area that spoke to that. With what is that regard to? And has the long-standing historical issues with the neighboring communities and the park been resolved? And where does that stand presently? And then the third issue that I'd like to touch on is the issue of the mining and exploration around the buffer zone and near the park. Have there been any further applications? Where do existing applications stand, etc.? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Winkler. Honorable Ganjo.
Thank you, Chair. Just two questions. In your report, let me first appreciate the report from Ms. Mangaliso. You have made mention of the board strategy session that was attended by the executive management of Isimangaliso, so Wetland Park Authority. I just wanted to ask the purpose of that strategy session, and also what were the outcomes of that session. And the second one, Chair, if they can tell us how many of the vacant posts are there in Isimangaliso, and what is the difference in the current budget compared to the year 2022-23 budget for employee-related costs? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. clear and obvious that like everyone is everyone wants to deal with the issue of unemployment. The level of unemployment in our communities is very high, and most probably also in the communities that lives in the margins of the protected areas, and have important implications for the conservation of this area. This means that the conservation agencies such as SANParks and Isimangaliso should look at poverty relief programs and interventions outside these protected areas to shift the attention of the people's expectations away from the national parks. Now, having been in Umkhanyakude, having seen the district demographic there, one wonders whether there are non-conservation development initiatives in the broader district that covers Isimangaliso Wetland Parks Authority, in collaboration, of course, with other district authorities in that particular district. If yes, are you able to give us the details? Who are those projects? What are those projects? And what are the areas of collaboration that Isimangaliso might be in? Areas of collaboration.
We have lost you.
Yes, CFO, please proceed.
Sure, we have lost you. I'm sorry, speaking.
I did not hear that, Honorable Kanjo.
We somehow lost you, Chair. While you were still speaking, so I'm not sure that were you done or.
Oh, okay. I don't know when at what point did I get cut, but the CFO, were you able to capture my question?
Chairperson, I did hear the part where you were asking about unemployment and our contribution towards that, and you were asking that, are there any initiatives that we are doing outside the park with other municipalities? I hope that was the question, but I don't know whether we was that the question.
You captured me perfectly.
Thank you, Chairperson. Can I continue, Chairperson? Can I respond?
Yes, please respond.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members, obviously some of the questions, as the Minister indicated earlier, would like to respond in writing. For instance, about the update of the meeting that the Minister held with the farmers, because there was a latest meeting that happened last week on Friday, where the CEO had to engage the farmers after the outcome of the Section 30A application. So we won't be able to provide Honorable Winkler on that particular area. And then Lung will be assisting me on the land encroachment. But what I'm aware of is that there was an issue that was brought to court around the Futululu matter, which the entity already, that matter is set in court, and there was an outcome around that matter, which Isimangaliso was engaged. We were given an opportunity to go back and engage with the communities, but explaining to them the Isimangaliso won the court matter, but we can also provide the outcome of the court around the Futululu matter. And I also want maybe to provide in writing
any other mining application. I'm not aware of such at the moment, of any mining application around East Mangaliso, around the buffer zone, but we'll be able to provide in writing. And Lunge will also be assisting me with the Honorable Ganto a question around the board strategy. In terms of the vacant post, vis-a-vis what was the budget, if you look at slide 29 of our presentation, was that in terms of the personal cost, the final last year's budget was for the 2 million. And because of the new post that we are providing, we have increased our budget for this year to go to 49 million. But this has to address the critical position that we have and also be able to fulfill our mandate around working for water. In particular, we have about six of those posts that address the land care managers, which are new positions, which were not there. And we are in line with our working for water, and they are on contract. They are not permanent, but they are on a 5-year fixed term contract. And then the question on Honorable Magistrate, the Chairperson, there is a program that we are working, and it is one of the, I would say, the good project that we have around district model. We are working on municipal cleaning and greening, where we have, at this point, we have about 330 employment that we have created around our municipalities. That will include Ntubatuba Municipality, as well as Khabisa Big Five. These are outside the park, but what they do is that they do and implement municipal cleaning and greening as well as in Umhlabiya Lingana as well. So in total, we have created about 300 employment around this program of municipal cleaning and greening, which are non conservation initiative. But where it assists, as you approach East Mangaliso areas, as you go to St. Lucia, you will find that you will not see any paper around from as you start approaching around 50 radius where we are having agreement with the municipalities. So it's one of the great initiatives that we have as the NDT. But I would like to hand over to Lumi to address the 4 points that I've just mentioned. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. The question by Honorable Winkler on the land encroachment. I would like to remind the Honorable members that the land encroachment strategy had to be devised due to the challenge that occurred at Sodwana Bay, where members of the community were plowing inside the park. They were plowing bananas and the amadumbe at the time. So we had to come up with the land encroachment strategy where we would explore the issues of law enforcement in partnership with Ezemvelo and also engage stakeholders like Amakhosi to try and address the matter. To date, the matter has been addressed because community members stopped plowing inside Sodwana Bay. Whereas on the southern side of the park, the protected area called Sutululu, that's when members of the communities from Duruduru decided that they want to go and live inside the park in the Sutululu area, which then resulted in the court order being granted at Peter Maritzburg High Court. We will provide the detailed response with regards to the land encroachment strategy. Moving on to the question by Honorable Gancho on the board strategy session attended by executive management. The board strategy session that was attended by management, it happened in September 2022. It was a session where management deliberates on
the annual performance plan of the forthcoming year to see which targets are we putting in, which ones are we addressing, and how are we going to contribute to the five-year strategy ultimately. So it is a collective workshop where management and the board members, as well as the CEO, sit and deliberate on the issues revolving around the implementation of the five-year strategic plan, but then dissecting it into the annual performance plan of the year ahead. And obviously, having to submit the annual performance plan to the department as per the departmental compliance calendar. I think I have responded to the issues. Otherwise, the issue of the outstanding issues, we know that, for example, we've got unresolved land claims, and we are working on those. So any other questions that we may not have addressed thoroughly, we plead that we respond in writing accordingly. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Winkler, is that the legacy hand?
Yes, Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable members, I invite you to take the last bite. Can I invite the honorable members to take the last bite on the Isimangaliso presentation?
Yeah, well, I'm covered by, so no problem from my side. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Brian. Okay. Inkosi Thembe. Are there your closing remarks? And then we invite Commissioner Minister. Then we talk.
Okay. No, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I think the CFO and executive member, they managed to cover some questions that they were asked, and we also would be requesting to write down those questions that we did not manage to answer, and we are actually working hard in terms of some of the questions that they were asked. I think as we'll submit them in writing, they will have more, I think they will have the improvement in terms of achieving some of the areas that we need to achieve. I think those are actually my submission, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson of the Board. Commissioner Minister?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, I think let's allow the entity to respond in writing. I'm sure colleagues understand that the CEO would have really wanted to be here, and I think would really have been in a position to engage at a deeper level on some of the issues with regard to communities. The technical details the department will present. But what I can say to colleagues is that there really was a very big difference between the visit I made to Isimangaliso last year and the visit that I made this year. And I think the big difference is the very impressive work that the organization has done to repair relations with communities on the outskirts of the park, and also to ensure that to the extent possible, there should be benefits in the form of job opportunities, but also in the form of small businesses being able to provide services to the park. And I think that was something that really was very encouraging. And I did manage, when I was there, to engage with a number of small businesses that, for example, through the work that they have done on upgrading accommodation, have managed to improve their CIBD status, and they're now able to tender for bigger work. I also met with young scientists that are serving an internship apprentice in Isimangaliso. So, you know, we're trying to do a lot to deal with the fact that young scientists find it extremely difficult to get employment. And there were also a number of communities where we have been in a position to provide extra work opportunities. I think that the main issue that was raised with me was that we need to do more for those who don't, for men who would be over the age of 35, because our targets tend to be with regard to women and youth, and we did undertake that we would look at that. There are additional work opportunities that are going to be coming, and we will be looking at that. You will also remember that there was quite a difficult relationship with the Nibela community in the north of the park, and particularly with those aspects that would have been involved in fishing. Again, I think there's a much better relationship, and we are also taking work opportunities into those northern areas of the park that really would have been much neglected in the past. So one, the flavour of the relationship, I think, has significantly changed, and that was, I think, very pleasing. I know that there have, since the decision was made to move ahead with the scientific work on the clearing of the channels, there has been a couple of public meetings, and everybody's working together on that. So I did get a sense of much, much better community working relationships across all communities, both historically disadvantaged and other communities. So that I think was very pleasing. And of course, you know, as you know, the estuary mouth is still open. And finally, all that silt is starting to move out as a result of the sustained action of the ocean. And once that silt moves, the water will then have an opportunity to move further inland and kill the reeds. So the reeds closer to the sea are actually starting to die. And those involved in fishing activities and so on, and tourism activities, are very pleased that the map is still open. So that I can just report as my impressions from the visit. I think that the chapter and verse that honourable members have asked for, we will supply in the written questions. Let me thank you very much, Chair, for the opportunity, and let me say that tomorrow we have cabinet subcommittee.
Yes.
It's going to be very difficult for me to participate in the committee meeting, I will try. If I'm finished with the first cabinet
subcommittee
by 9:30, I will try to log on and
yeah. Okay.
just cool. introduce the delegation. but if I'm not able to do that, I do beg for your your understanding, because I have two memos in the first cabinet subcommittee at 8:30 tomorrow morning. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Minister. Colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, with all that being said, we have arrived at the end of the meeting. It has indeed been a very long meeting, very informative. I want to thank everybody who participated in today's meeting. Thank you very much to all the entities, chairpersons. We have noted also the passing on of the CEO's mother, of Ismangaliso, and we hope to receive some of the feedback that the department entities have committed to give to us in writing. We hope to see you tomorrow in the continuation of the portfolio committee, and on Thursday and Friday, Saturday, Sunday, as we do public hearings on climate change in the Eastern Cape. For now, the meeting is closed. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Recording stopped.
Thank you, sir.
Bye.
Thank you very much, DM. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Winkler.